Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Michelle Bitt from Canada Without Poverty.
And I'm Teresa Iyer from Citizens for Public Justice.
And together we work on the Dignity for All campaign. As many of you might know, this session is part 5 in a 6-part series that highlights some of the incredible work of our colleagues on poverty issues related to the poverty reduction strategy. And in particular, we'll be having a discussion on what should be on our minds coming up to the federal election. Just a bit of housekeeping before we officially begin. If you have any questions at any point in time, please feel free to click the Q&A box on the left side of the screen and make sure to type in any questions that you might have for our panelists that we'll hopefully be able to address at the end of this session. So we are joined today by two fantastic panelists, Emily and Stefania. For those who aren't familiar with Emily and Stefania, Emily Paradis has been an activist, a researcher, an advocate, and frontline service provider on issues of housing and homelessness for almost 30 years. Her scholarship and practice aim to support marginalized communities in claiming spaces and the rights of the city. Dr. Paradis is an instructor with the Urban Studies Program of Innes College at University of Toronto, a Maitrey Fellow, a collaborator with the Canadian Observatory on Homelessness, a member of the Right to Housing Coalition. As an independent consultant, she conducts research and evaluation with partners, including the Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario, Legal Aid Ontario, Parkdale Neighbourhood Land Trust, Sistering, Social Planning Toronto, and Sister City Toronto. Welcome, Emily. And next up, we have Stefania. Stefania Sakia comes to the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness following a 10-year career in journalism where she asserted herself as an expert on homelessness solutions. She joined the CIA as a communications advisor with an intention to see the end of homelessness in her lifetime. For the past decade, as a reporter and editor, she has explored housing crisis issues concerning the nation's most vulnerable with a very special focus on her hometown in Vancouver and the downtown East Side. So welcome, Stefania. So as we get started, I'm going to hand the floor over to Emily to walk us through where we're at, where we're at with the national housing legislation, and where we'll be going from here. So Emily, please go ahead and take it away. Emily, do we still have you on the line? Okay, well, just in case we're missing Emily, why don't we then, Stefania, start off with your comments to provide a little bit of background on the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness's Act before the federal election.
Absolutely. So over the years, I've covered many municipal, provincial, and federal elections, and they tend to all boil down to the same questions. You know, will we be heard? Who has their finger on the pulse, and who has tangible promises that can lead to the formulation of effective policy? And there's a consensus right now that housing and the cost of living are key topics going into this October election. Recent public opinion polls have demonstrated that housing affordability is amongst the top issues of concern for voters. My journalism experience includes the front lines of Vancouver's downtown East Side. I've lost friends to homelessness, and I know countless are experiencing it or are still recovering from it. And it's partly why I got out of the news business. I wanted to get involved with the Alliance to impress upon the federal government what they might be missing on the ground level. Now, with our sights on the election, it's a direct opportunity for us to signal to our leaders that solving homelessness is possible if we act. Our next leader must focus on addressing housing and homelessness, and it's a subject that just can't be ignored. The state of homelessness today is the result of policy 30 years ago that saw serious divestment from affordable housing. Along the line, we stopped doing what needed to be done. We further marginalize those who are often seen as taking up too many resources, despite the fact that housing folks is far less a burden on the taxpayer's pocket than letting people struggle through the system. A permanent bed is far cheaper than a shelter bed with other contributing factors that translate to higher costs. Where we are today is not the fault of any single party, but the result of decades of a lack of political will to invest in affordable housing and the best practices to help our most vulnerable population. But we've also made more progress in the last 5 years than in the entirety of the last 30 on homelessness policy. And we got here through fierce advocacy, best practices, and making the case that homelessness is solvable. We have a national housing strategy that includes the Reaching Home Federal Homelessness Strategy and a legislated right to housing. There are over 1.7 million Canadian households living in core housing need, and it's essential that federal parties develop policies that commit to eliminating homelessness and strengthen the community housing sector. With the right supports in place, we can make homelessness history in the next decade. Every election is a critical point in time to get our priority state at the top government level. It's not to say we're hoping for a specific outcome, but we are seeking a clear and strong commitment. A few weeks ago, along with the CHRA, Co-op Housing Federation of Canada, and Bureau Québécois de OSBL de Habitation, wrote a letter to every federal party leader. As organizations representing the community housing and homelessness sector in Canada, we are calling on all of the major political parties to prioritize housing affordability this October. And luckily for them, we spelled out how they can do it by recommending these policies in their election platforms. So we're looking for a commitment to maintain federal leadership and investment to address access to housing. Long-term, reliable funding is required to end homelessness and strengthen community housing in Canada. The next government must maintain housing and homelessness programs and policies that have already been introduced, including policies designed to keep housing affordable for vulnerable and low-income people. This includes the right to housing legislation, the National Housing Strategy Act, and the accountability measures that protect this right. We need them to develop and adequately fund a distinct urban, rural, and northern Indigenous housing strategy. Indigenous folks living in urban, rural, and northern settings face far greater housing inequality when compared to non-Indigenous peoples. Although the federal government is finalizing three distinctions-based housing strategies, there is no distinct strategy for Indigenous peoples living in urban and rural centers, despite the fact that 87% of Indigenous peoples live in these settings. So we're calling on the parties to provide dedicated funding for Indigenous peoples in need of housing in urban, rural, and northern areas in line with the scale of need. And we want them to involve urban, rural, and northern Indigenous folks in planning and governance of their housing issues that reflect the spirit and intent of truth and reconciliation, and create and fund a national Indigenous housing center that would provide Indigenous-led governance and oversight to Indigenous housing, as well as build capacity development. We're also looking to increase the supply of community housing. It's no secret that the demand for affordable housing in Canada continues to grow. Waitlists for community housing have increased, and housing affordability has put greater pressure on community housing to provide access. In order to increase the overall housing supply of community housing, we're calling on the parties to increase support for new community housing through an expanded toolkit of programs and policy options designed to increase access to capital, and to increase funding and modify the mandate of the Federal Lands Initiative so that greater amounts of surplus land and buildings can be made available for community housing purposes. We also want them to protect the existing supply of community housing and ensure proper supports to protect supportive housing. And finally, we want them to commit to the elimination of homelessness in Canada. An estimated 235,000 different Canadians will experience homelessness this year in Canada at an estimated cost of $7 billion a year. In the National Housing Strategy Act, the government has committed to the progressive realization of the right to housing. Under international human rights law, this means priority in housing policy must be given to vulnerable groups and those in greatest need of housing. Recognizing homelessness as a violation of human rights and committing to addressing it as a human rights violation, which means eliminating it in the shortest possible time. And this is all within reach. Right now, communities across Canada are already seeing some success in preventing and reducing homelessness. In Edmonton, they've reduced it by 43% since 2008. Coarse Lakes and Halliburton County in Ontario have reduced chronic homelessness over 50% in just 6 months. And Guelph Wellington has reduced chronic homelessness by 24% in just 7 months. And there are more coming. So we're calling on all the parties to commit to the elimination of homelessness in Canada by 2030 through federal leadership, including the expansion of Reaching Home and increased and targeted capital investment in affordable and supportive housing for people experiencing homelessness. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Stefania. And I believe that Emily is back on after being bounced off. Emily, would you like to pick it up from there?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and my apologies for my untimely departure. I think I may have made our presentation a bit topsy-turvy because I'm going to now talk about how we got to this point of having a national housing strategy and having a recognized right to housing in Canada. First, I just want to thank Stefania for setting out that current context so effectively and for framing the challenge that faces us now going into the next election. But to take us back, it's important to recognize that the right to housing has a really long history in Canada. Of course, the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 25, guarantees a right to an adequate standard of living that includes housing. And of course, as we know, Canadians were key in framing those early international human rights documents. In 1976, Canada ratified the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which also recognizes and guarantees adequate housing as a human right. And when we talk about adequate housing, that means housing that's affordable, the cost of which doesn't interfere with basic needs, that's in habitable condition, that has security as tenure for the occupants, and that meets other standards in terms of access to amenities, access to necessary infrastructure, location, and cultural adequacy. And so in this context, it was actually not that uncommon in the 1970s and 80s for federal government officials to affirm housing as a basic right and need when announcing new housing policies. In spite of that, though, economic and social rights like housing are not recognized in Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, not explicitly in any case, although advocates have long argued that they are included under provisions such as Article 7 that guarantees the right to life and security of the person. In 1993, though, as part of a global shift to neoliberal governments and market-based economies, Canada's federal government declared that it was getting out of the housing business, and the provinces quickly followed suit. And as Stefania has already described, mass homelessness became entrenched on the streets of Canada's cities as a result. And activists, advocates, and people facing homelessness responding to the emergence and entrenchment of mass homelessness called for Canada to uphold the right to housing. Individuals and organizations attended reviews of Canada by the International Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights of the United Nations in 1998 and 2006. And those committees chastised Canada for allowing homelessness to affect tens of thousands in a nation with such wealth. Canada's international image as a bastion of human rights was increasingly at odds with its failure to respect and protect social and economic rights like the right to housing. Our current, more recent journey to the right to housing in Canada began more than 10 years ago when a group of advocates came together to discuss launching a charter challenge. And with funding secured from the Law Foundation of Ontario, a challenge was launched by the Centre for Equality Rights and Accommodation and four brave individuals who had faced homelessness and inadequate housing. They were Jennifer Tanigaja, Brian Dubaldier, Janice Arsenal, and Ansar Mahmoud. In May 2010, the plaintiffs, along with a supportive coalition, delivered 10,000 pages of evidence to the Ontario Superior Court in Toronto. The challenge argued that provincial and federal governments were in violation of international and Canadian law for failing to address the crisis of inadequate housing and homelessness. Instead of claiming individual remedies, the plaintiffs were calling for a national housing strategy that would put Canada in line with its international covenants. Now, alongside the court challenge, the Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario led a community campaign. So the courts weren't the only front on which this struggle was being waged. And that community-based campaign became the Right to Housing Coalition.
a coalition of dozens of organizations and individuals that held forums, staged demonstrations, and hosted National Housing Day marches and events to keep the right to housing in the public eye as the court slowly wound its way through the courts. And at the same time, advocates were making changes at their local levels based on the understanding of the right to adequate housing. For example, in 2008, a challenge by people facing homelessness was successful in striking down Victoria's bylaw against camping in parks. And the Homecoming Coalition in Ontario was successfully challenging discriminatory zoning provisions that were being applied to supportive housing by many cities. Our efforts to realize the right to housing in Canada met with strong resistance at all levels of government. For example, in 2012, an independent member's bill, C-400, that called for a national housing strategy, enjoyed wide support across parties, but was killed at the last minute by a whip vote. And in response to the charter challenge, the Ontario government brought a successful motion to strike. And this mechanism, the motion to strike, is really intended to keep spurious lawsuits out of the courts, cases that have no chance of success. It's not intended for the resolution of a case with the kind of social importance for the public interest of this case. But nevertheless, that motion to strike was successful. And in 2014, the Ontario Court of Appeal upheld that decision to strike the case. And in 2015, the Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal. But organizing by groups and individuals across the country successfully positioned housing and homelessness as a key issue in the 2015 election. And in 2017, the federal government announced a national housing strategy that would take a rights-based approach. And in 2018, they held consultations across the country on what that rights-based national housing strategy should look like. And importantly, this included consultations with people facing inadequate housing and homelessness, both those convened by the federal government and independent consultations convened by NAITRE and other groups. And so last summer and fall in 2018 saw a vigorous national campaign led by the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness, NAITRE, and the Social Rights Advocacy Centre to ensure that the strategy would include meaningful recognition of the right to adequate housing and effective mechanisms to monitor and enforce that right. And I suspect that many of the folks on the webinar today may have participated in parts of that campaign by sending letters to your MPPs, if your MPs rather, or signing the petition. Even so, when the National Housing Strategy legislation was first tabled in April 2019, many of us were really disappointed because some of the hard-won provisions didn't make it in. So once again, the coalition took action and managed to restore the most important elements. And finally, the National Housing Strategy Act passed just this June 21st. And it includes key elements for making the right to housing real in Canada. First of all, it recognizes housing as a fundamental human right, and that's the first time we've seen that recognition in Canadian law. Secondly, it declares that it's the housing policy of the Government of Canada to progressively realize the right to housing. And by progressively realize, what's meant is that it must always be demonstrating progress in keeping with the investment of its maximum available resources towards realizing the goal of adequate housing for all. And that the first priority has to be to the people who are most vulnerable and facing the deepest violation of their housing rights. And as Stefania has pointed out, that means addressing homelessness urgently and ending homelessness. The National Housing Strategy Act also includes a requirement that all future governments implement a national housing strategy. And it includes mechanisms to ensure participatory engagement and leadership on the right to housing. It establishes a National Housing Council whose role will be to review and advise on federal housing policy. And that council will include members of communities that are directly affected by inadequate housing, and it will also include individuals with lived experience of homelessness. The Strategy Act also requires the appointment of a federal housing advocate whose role is to monitor housing conditions, conduct research into systemic barriers to the realization of the right to housing, and provide recommendations that the minister must respond to. And finally, and this is a key part, the Act includes an enforcement mechanism. The federal housing advocate will have the power to order hearings into major systemic barriers in areas of federal jurisdiction. And those hearings will be presided over by a panel appointed from the National Housing Council. And the presiding panel must always include at least one member with this experience. And so altogether, the Act really includes a package of mechanisms that provide us with critical tools for realizing the right to housing in Canada. It can't accomplish anything on its own, but those tools are there for us to use as we continue this long-standing work.
Thank you so much, Emily, for that important context on the background of the legislation. I have a couple questions for both of you, but just before I go into that, just a reminder to the attendees, if you have any questions, on the left-hand side of your screen, you'll see a box that says Q&A, and feel free to type them in there, and we're able to get our panelists to answer those afterwards. I think I'll start with you, Emily. Just what are some of the powers that the federal government has when it comes to this, and how can they help guide the provinces and territories? Who needs to step up?
The Act really ensures that in areas of federal jurisdiction, the government must recognize and uphold the right to adequate housing and seek to progressively realize it. Its powers in relationship to areas of provincial and local jurisdiction are more in the area of conditionality. For example, the National Housing Strategy flows an enormous investment of federal resources through the provinces. So we would like to see, for example, some rights-based criteria and conditions applied to the transfer of those resources to the provinces. In other words, the federal government doesn't get the power through the passage of this Act to intervene in areas of provincial jurisdiction, but it can take a leadership role in encouraging and even requiring, in some respects, provinces and municipalities to follow suit.
And this might be a good opportunity too, Emily. As we're talking about provincial responsibility, as we're talking about municipal responsibility, do you want to tell us a little bit about the Right to Housing campaign in Toronto?
Thank you so much. Yes. Another piece that the National Housing Strategy opens up for all of us now who are advocating for housing across Canada is to try to get this implemented in our local settings. And so here in Toronto, the city is planning its next 10-year housing strategy, and there's a current campaign to ensure that Toronto's next housing strategy, like the National Housing Strategy, is based in human rights and in the right to housing. I hope that everyone here who is based in Toronto will click on this link to let the city know that its strategy should be based in the right to adequate housing and should seek to progressively realize that right.
Thank you so much. Stefania, I'll move over to you now. What can we learn from the current election campaigns and debates that are unfolding in the U.S.?
Right. So I'm sure many of us have been keeping track of the Democratic debates that are happening right now. where they elect a leader of that party but will run for president. And something that I think that has really been missing is during these debates and some of these campaign efforts, we're not really seeing any of these candidates discuss housing policy and what their plans are. And the states, very much in parallel with us, is seeing a lot of the same issues around homelessness and housing affordability. It's not special to us, unfortunately. So I think that in the states, that's a really missed opportunity, and I'm sure advocates in the states are frustrated that they're not getting that airtime, they're not getting that priority. It's having a hard time finding its way with all the other controversies that are happening in that country right now. And that's something that I really hope we don't see going into our this fall election. So we're really wanting to impress upon our federal leaders that housing really needs to be at the forefront of these debates, of their platforms. You know, so I encourage folks, you know, to visit ahomeforeveryone.ca. That outlines some of what I was saying earlier about what we're looking for in the next fall in this election and in these platforms. You know, from that website, it's kind of a springboard. You can send a message to the candidates in your writing, telling them exactly what you think they need to do around community housing and homelessness. You can tweet to the candidates in your writing, hashtag a home for everyone. And I think something that I always encourage folks to do is to really show up for the debate. Get to know who your candidates are, get to know their faces, read up on the platforms. Don't be afraid to contact them and let them know what you're thinking, because at the end of the day, they're representing our interests, so we have to let them know what those interests are.
Great. Thank you so much for that, Sonia. So we have a couple of questions maybe that we'll ask in our last minute or two. And my first question, I think, is quite simple, and that is, knowing that we're coming up to this federal election in Canada, do you think that the issue of housing is on the radar of political parties? And who is talking about it in their platforms, and are they talking about it in a way that that we want them to? And Stefania, you've spoken a bit to this, but can you just speak a little bit more to what it is that we can do to make sure that this is on the radar in terms of platform building and those platforms that have been released? Emily and Stefania, I'm not sure which one of you wants to take up this question next, but I'll pass it over to you.
Stefania, I think you're best positioned to answer that question.
Yeah, you know what? Sure. What I've been seeing a lot so far, given where I think September is really when it's going to start kicking into high gear, we're going to see more in-depth platforms being released, hopefully. I think at this point we're just seeing a lot of the Liberals announcing things that are coming out of the National Housing Strategy Act that Emily and I have been talking about, you know, federal funding announcements that are happening across the country. So that's kind of what I've been seeing so far. We're not really seeing any new promises on housing affordability. Right now, you know, the Liberals had a commitment to, you know, cutting chronic homelessness by 50%. And that really doesn't tell us a lot. We don't really know what mechanisms they're using to measure a 50% reduction. What are they comparing that against? Because really, the best number we have right now is 235,000, but that's most honestly an underestimate of what we really think is happening across the country. So like I was saying, you know, get to know your candidates, hold them accountable, show up to you know, an all candidates meeting, and don't be afraid to ask them housing specific questions in your region and even nationally. You know, encourage your friends and colleagues to attend those debates. Write to them, tweet at them. They're right now in election mode. Politicians are the most accessible. They're really listening. They really want to show that they're listening. So take full advantage.
And I would just add to that it's really important that we work to ensure that the right to housing survives the election, and that we let all the candidates know how important that recognition of the right is and how crucial it is that that be retained.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks so much, both. Well, with that, perhaps we'll wrap up, because we did promise that this would only be a 30-minute session. As we mentioned, this has been part 5. in a 6-part poverty policy series. Thank you so, so very much to Emily and Stefania for joining us this afternoon. What an excellent discussion. For those who have joined us, stay tuned for our next session, which will be next Wednesday, where we'll be talking about recommendations on jobs and employment and what those all mean for poverty and the poverty reduction strategy. So again, thank you so very much for tuning in, and thank you so much to Emily and Stefania for your excellent expertise and insight into this issue as we gear up for the election. So thanks so much, everyone.